B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Right, hi there, everybody. Welcome to the program. It's a Friday, and here on Felger and Maz, we do something called Agenda Free Friday. The rationale there is that we have no agenda. You said it with your wonderful, insightful, and succinct phone calls. That means quick and to the point. And so that's what we do. We give you opening thoughts while you're calling in, and as soon as you're loaded up and ready to go on the board, I go to you. It's a show that's so powerful, it has sponsors. And our sponsor now for Agenda Free Friday is, we're driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, where car buying is always agenda-free. Choose from new Acuras, Audis, Hondas, Toyotas, Volvos, and over 500 pre-owned vehicles. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com.
Audi.
Still can't get through it.
Audi.
But that's the way that is. That's Maz. Murray's alongside. The hounds have been released. You're already loading them up at 617-779-0985. Opening thoughts first. Who wants to go first?
Murray.
Yeah, I guess I'm being thrown to the wolves here because Maz is out there grab-assing as the show is starting. All right, yeah.
Is everything here? Effing fire drill every single time. Is now the thing broken?
No, Maz, you go. I'm not doing this.
Murray's having a day, I can tell. From the moment he walked in, I could tell exactly.
There should be a commercial break before the show starts.
Here we go. So look, it's probably better to get this out of the way anyway. I want to talk about the Bryce Harper contract.
Go.
And I heard about it, and I said, 13 years, $330 million. And I went, whoa. Then I did the math. That's $25 million a year. Doesn't that feel low?
Yes.
Doesn't it feel low after all the hype of Bryce Harper, $35 million. Bryce Harper might get $40 million. Bryce Harper could be the first $400 million contract. Bryce Harper this, Bryce Harper that. $330 million. The number caught my eye, but then I did $25 million a year. And I went, that's interesting. And then it occurred to me. The $330 is $5 million more than what Giancarlo Stanton got for a 13-year deal. For Scott Boras, the agent, this was purely about getting more than 325. If it had been 13 and 326, Boras would have been happy. So this is where it bugs the crap out of me, because it has nothing to do with putting the player in the best market or, you know, the right fit or anything of the like. It is purely 100% about the contract. 100%. And furthermore, I would go so far as to tell you, I don't care if it is the biggest contract in baseball history. Nolan Arenado of the Rockies got a better deal than Bryce Harper did. 8 years, $260 million, $32.5 a year. And Arenado wasn't even a free agent. And he got $32.5 a year. So what I would, you know, look, this is a little bit of my Boras agenda here, because I think Boras does a disservice to a lot of clients too. As much as, and he's a terrific agent, but there are some guys he messes up. I'm not sure this negotiation's really a win for Scott Boras. And furthermore, I'll tell you this. Nolan Arenado, again, 8 years, 260, 32.5 per. Pretty good deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know who he fired as his agent 4 years ago?
Oh, no.
Scott Boras.
Interesting.
He fired Scott Boras as his agent. He remained with his current team, never went to the market, and got 8 years, $260 million. He got a better deal than Bryce Harper did.
Murray.
Is this now working?
Yes.
Check.
Sounds good.
All right, good. So good win for the Bruins last night. You got to take it with a grain of salt, though, considering Tampa was on the second of a back-to-back, and they looked like they were skating through mud. So, fooled you. All aboard. All aboard the Beast Train, everyone. All aboard. In case I didn't emphasize it enough after the San Jose win, let me do it again for the people in the cheap seats. All aboard the Beast Train, everybody. Dead legged last night, Tampa? Don't care. Nope, don't care if second back-to-back. The Bruins, let it be known to the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first 3 minutes. I was in the building last night. It was great. They let it be known all aboard within the first 3 minutes of the game. Thanks to David Backes tuning up that Adam Ernie. They said, welcome to hell. Like they have to all the best competition that they've faced so far and just in recent weeks. They peppered that domain all night. They continue to get excellent play from the kids, DeBrusk, Heinen. They continue to show toughness. The balls like we haven't seen since 2011. And last night proves again, more than anything else, even if you want to say that they're dead leg, Tampa, they can hang with anybody. They can hang all aboard. They can hang with anybody in this league. The successful West Coast road trip, couple of wins over San Jose, win over the Washington Capitals, which I feel like was overlooked because it was played on Super Bowl Sunday. They've taken a couple from the Islanders, who are a damn good team. They've beat Calgary. So again, all aboard the Beast train. What else do you? Thank you, Jimmy. What else do you need to see from this Bruins team right now? They're going deep. They can win the cup. Not saying they're going to, but they can. All aboard the Beast train. All aboard.
All right, I like it. I like it. Mine is just to tease something I want to get to later. As usual, I like to keep it quick off the top. But yesterday, the Patriots, or we found out, I guess it happened earlier in the week, their character coach, and I forgot they even have one. They have something called a character coach. Jack Easterby left the team. And it was an easy joke at the time, you know. Prostitution, cheating, murder, steroids, drugs, like, at some point, the character coach throws up his hands and says, I can't help you people, right? Like, there's sort of a cheap, easy joke. I made it.
You people are beyond help.
So, I mean, that was just sort of the easy thing to come up with. You know, not even reading into the story and just reading the Globe story about the character coach. Well, there's a little something to that. There's actually a little something to that. So there's a little bit more meat on that bone than I gave it credit for when I just heard about the character coach. So we'll get to that story coming up in a bit. But as we like to do, first segment, we get to phones. And why don't we start off by improving the conditions here by bringing in our gal pal, Mary in Marshfield. Hi, Mary.
Hi, guys. It's been a long time. I just want to say, like, I think Bruce Cassidy deserves consideration for Coach of the Year. He's really taken this team, who looked shaky at the beginning of the year. Thanks. I love it. And a goalie who was out of his own mind, like, who knows where Tuukka's head was at the beginning of the year. And he has kicked their butts into shape. They play for him. They want to play for him. They want to play for each other. It's infectious. This team is awesome. Now, I want to contrast that with Brad Stevens and the way he's coaching those Celtics. Hey, maybe the green mist, but I'm telling you, the black and gold fog is so much better.
Thanks, love Mary. It. Okay, let's see.
All aboard.
I don't know if they're playing for Stevens, but, I mean, he is a heck of a regular season coach. He's been on a great run. They have the third best record in the league.
Cassidy, you mean?
Cassidy, yeah.
Sorry, Cassidy.
Stevens, no.
No, no. They have the third best record in the league. Second best record since he took over. Now, 2 years ago, they don't have the second best roster. I'm sorry, they don't. They may not even be a top five roster. Okay? And especially this year, no Chara, no Bergeron for the same period of time for a while. Talk about your two most instrumental players up front and in back. And that's in the middle of their surge to the second or third best record in the league. Now they've gone how many without Pasternak, where they've won every game or haven't lost one of them, and they're scoring.
I think it's seven games without him. They're averaging almost four goals a game, and Krejci, who was playing with him, has 12 points.
Tremendous.
It's ridiculous. It is. Like, I mean, if you were to ask me, I think Cassidy's the coach of the year. I do.
I mean, I don't know who else it would be. The you know, Gallant there in Vegas, you know, worthy guy last year.
Given, I mean, what about Cooper?
He's got the best roster in the league.
I know, but they are so far and away better than everybody else that I wonder if that's going to do it for him.
So Cooper has to be, you know, and I'd say the Calgary coach, because Calgary's actually the second best record in the league, and I can't remember who's behind the bench there. But Cassidy's tremendous. Tremendous.
All aboard, Mike.
Hasn't translated yet to the postseason. It hasn't. So that's the last little hurdle. Will in the car on the Red Sox here on Agenda Free Friday. Go ahead, Will.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question for you. I'm tired of hearing these pea-brain fans coming off the high of last year, 108 wins. They have the T-shirt. I'm legitimately concerned about this bullpen going into the year. They didn't do anything to get better. They lost Kimbrel. And I think if you looked at how Cora and Dana Lavangie managed that bullpen in the playoffs, I think they knew that they had some serious issues going on. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Thank you.
Maz?
Well, look, I generally agree. I think they've neglected the bullpen, and I think there were lots of reasons for it, one of which is money, which we haven't gotten a lot into, but nonetheless,
they're
close to that luxury tax threshold of 246. And so I did some math the other day. I had them at about 242. Other people have them around 240. So the real reason might be money. Okay? The real reason might be money. But that aside...
Isn't some of it arrogance, too?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. We figured it out last year. We'll figure it out this year.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. Now, look, do I think that in the regular season they can find a way to survive? Yes. I'd give Brazier a shot at it. It feels like they're going to go with Barnes. But I would hope and expect that sometime between now and July 31st that they are going to add significant bullpen help.
See, I think it's sort of just the opposite. Like, I think once they get to the postseason and they start using their starters out there and, you know, all hands on deck, then I feel that they can get by with their, you know, with their deficiencies. They can overcome them and, you know, plan around them. The regular season's different. They're not going to send starters out there in the regular season.
No, they're not. And this is what I think they're going to need to make a trade, because I don't know that they have the horses to get through the regular season with what they've got.
Okay, Frank the Tank on Murray's opening take and a facet of it. Go ahead, Frank.
There you go. Keep that horn going. Right off the bat, he starts his fourth line. To me, right then and there, that says to Tampa Bay, you're coming into our barn and we're here to play. We're not taking anything. We're here to play with you, and we're going to give it to you all night long. And they did. And Backus, getting cross-checked into the net, getting right back up after he got his ass kicked the night before, and saying, you know what, I'm not taking this. I'm leading the charge, dropping the gloves, and we're going to have a go. I thought it set the tone for the entire night. They're on a roll, boys. Let's see how long they can keep it going.
Thanks, Frank. That was Murray's point about Backus. How about Backus? So never mind he went down on three shots the night before. You know that he is one concussion away from Palookaville.
Yeah.
I mean, it ended his season last year. A lot of people thought it was going to end his career. Maybe there are people in his life who are telling him, David, why don't we just call it a day? Because this is now, I don't know how many he's had. What, he's one of these guys with, you know, six, seven, eight, who knows how many. And the guy keeps sticking his nose in there. So one hand you can say, dumb. The other hand you say, that's a tough, tough dude right there. That's a tough guy. Hockey player.
I don't know if it's worth $6 million a year, but there's value in his makeup.
Well, so that's his. That's what he brings to the table. It's not on the ice. It's not, you know, I don't know if he belongs in the lineup. But that thing, yes, that's, and that thing ain't worth $6 million. It should be worth $2 million at the end of your roster.
If that.
But, okay, at least, you know, at least he's not just collecting the check. He's still invested and filling the role as best he can, or filling a role. So I give huge credit to that guy.
You know, when you put it in those terms too, filling a role, there's a $6 million guy who's had a pretty good career, has been a captain of a team, right? He was the captain of the Blues, right?
Yeah,
All of that. And now he's just willing to do whatever it takes to fill a role.
That's more useful than Rick Nash.
Huh. You know? No, but interesting.
No, it's interesting that he's willing to accept a lesser role.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Interesting that he's willing to accept a lesser role for the greater good. What a concept.
I'm going to think about that for a minute. More of your wonderful phone calls right after this.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
They drop the puck. Bruins win it. Horn sounds. Two Titans entered, and the Boston Bruins will lead with 2 points. The Bruins with another convincing win. 4-1 over the Tampa Bay Lightning. They end the month of February 11-0-2 and snap the Lightning's franchise record 10-game winning streak.
All right, my Bruins thoughts, Murray. They should have won last night given the condition Tampa was in. The good news is that they didn't just win, they dominated. They dominated. They were all over that team.
And they outshot them 3-1 basically the whole night.
And outchanced them. I mean, Louis Dominique.
Domingue.
Domingue. Louis Domingue. He's just a guy. So he was out of his boobs. That guy played out of his boobies last night.
I mean, it should have been 4-0 after two periods.
So
worse.
So the Tampa, third game in four nights, second of a back-to-back. They played an overtime game the night before. All of that, they looked that way. They looked road-weary. They played their backup goalie. They're rotating guys in and out of the lineup on defense, and it's sort of that they did not fire all their guns, so you probably should have won that game. And you did, but you didn't just win it. You dominated. So that's the good news. It's not like Tampa wasn't ready and played like crap and you just eked one out. No, you dominated them, even though it was always only one nothing until midway through the third. So that's the good news. More good news, I still think that those new guys, I like Charlie Coyle. He did a couple of, you know, he had a couple shifts earlier in that game last night where you just sort of see his size and his range and his ability to sort of fend people off and create some space and control the puck. And again, he ain't no superstar, but he's a legit third line guy, and you didn't have a legit third line. So I think that really fills a gap there. And I like this Johansson. I do. I think he's, you know, again, is he a legit top six winger? Debatable. I'm not telling you he's a legit high-end top six winger. I do know he's a hell of a lot better than what you were throwing out there. So I think those two things have really filled in some gaps there. And you're a more complete team. So those are two things that I like. Never mind how you're playing and how your players are playing and the buy-in and the makeup of the team. It's all good. That feels good. So I'm in. The yeah, but is, you know, you did this last year too. It was like the exact same thing. I mean, it really was.
Yeah, look, again, I'm not drawing any conclusions to the spring. And me being the, you know, negative Nancy that I am. How about Tampa at the beginning of that, with the beginning of the third period there?
Right, so when Tampa decided to come out and engage, they're freaking filthy.
Holy crap, the Bruins couldn't get the puck. They couldn't get the puck out of the zone. It was ridiculous. And I went, oh boy. Like when they really flex, they're scary. And they are scary.
Remember, same spot last year. You were vying for the President's Trophy. You were, you know, you and Tampa for first place the entire year. You have some success against Tampa, and then you have a game down there really late in the year. Last 2 weeks of the year. And it was just a game where you knew Tampa said, okay, enough of this. And they beat you 4-0, and it really set the tone for when you faced them again in the second round. And you barely survived the first round because, and I hate to bring this up, you got to the playoffs, and Tuca got Tuca-ish. Okay, he hasn't finished strong for years. He hasn't started strong for years, and he hasn't finished strong in a long time. And you survived Rask in that first round against Toronto. You survived him. He was pulled out of one game, right? Wasn't he pulled out of game five? And he probably should have been pulled out of game seven after the third goal on the eighth shot or whatever it was. But you survived it. And then he was fine against Tampa. That wasn't the story against Tampa. But I'm just saying, it could be different this year. I'm not ruling you out. And last year's experience is probably better for you this year. And upsets happen in hockey, and I think you have the makeup to pull an upset. Do you have the goalie to pull an upset? Whole different story. Yeah. We don't need to go there today. But there's your yeah, but. There's your yeah,
oh, yeah, but. No, there's some similarities there, too. But just in terms of the toughness, and again, I just thought that was so telling. Yeah, you're right. Like, Tampa looked slow and sluggish last night, but within the first few minutes, back is tuning that dude up. Me like, no, even if you're going to be slow tonight, welcome to our barn. Welcome to hell. And I like that. And that kind of thing you haven't seen in a long time with this team. And not just the young kids, too. Was it you that mentioned Krejci? Like, the play of Krejci, again, last night, he looks like a completely different player. Like, what's got into this guy?
I mean, it's unbelievable. It really is. It is the single biggest development for them this year, if you ask me. And there are other ones that are close. But him getting back to being, you know, a top center on the top two lines, like, big change in the team.
Look at their runs. I'm not telling you he's their best player, but it sort of matches up that when he goes, they go.
I like him and Johansson together, too.
Yes.
They had that 2-on-1 last night. They didn't execute. I mean, they didn't quite finish it, but you can see those guys, they're on the same page. They're on the same frequency.
Okay. To your calls again, Mark in Groton. Go ahead, Mark.
How you doing? Yeah, just this one's for conductor Big Jim Murray. I just wanted him to pump the brakes a little bit before the train runs off the tracks here. Any true Bruins fan is really going to know that we're not going to be truly happy until Big Zdeno Chara has a full-length beard and he's holding up the championship trophy over his head. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay. I mean, Tampa's you would feel different if Tampa wasn't sitting there where they are. That's just a big boulder there. I mean, they're second round for you. Probably the way this is shaping up, if you get there. And that's going to be a really tough out. They're better than everybody. It's not just you. They're better than everybody. So we'll see, though. We'll see. I think you got a shot.
I think they have a hell of a lot better chance to maximize than the Celtics do, I'll tell you that.
Speaking of that, Luke in Vermont. Green Mountain Luke, how you doing, bud?
Oh, it's getting more depressing as I listen to you talk about that overachieving hockey team and everybody overachieving and playing so well and hard and for their coach. It's a sharp contrast. All your guys' criticism of the Celtics all year, for the most part, I would agree with. But I don't think, Maz, you've told me for years that the regular season doesn't matter. When we had Isaiah Thomas, the regular season didn't matter and all the regular season wins. And you didn't care that Cleveland would struggle because when it got to the playoffs, they had Kyrie and LeBron. And mm-hmm. I realize we don't have LeBron. I realize that. But we still have a lot of talent. But specifically, Maz, you've thrown a lot of shade at Jaylen Brown all year. And early on, I would agree, but I know you don't respect my analysis, but Jay King, you know him from The Athletic.
Luke, I respect your analysis. I do. Go ahead.
Jay King says that Jaylen Brown's been like their best player over the last 6 weeks. And I really think for us to reach our ceiling, you need Jaylen Brown to be a significant piece on this team. I'd like to see Brad put him back in the starting lineup. I'd kind of like to see him put Baines in there, too, for the two Marcuses. And I think I get why we needed them to go in the starting lineup when Brad did it. But I think those guys are role players. And when you ask role players to be more than that, I think they struggle.
Okay, look, I'm just going to stop you there. If Jaylen Brown, and I'm not going to dispute how he's played the last month or so, they all have to get off his ass then. Because they're up, they are all over that kid. All of them. The players, the coach, they're all over him.
Agreed. So look, honestly, to me, Morris, the part of the problem for me is that I look at Morris and I say, ideally, he's a bench guy. I look at Jaylen Brown and I say, ideally, I think he's a bench guy.
Isn't Marcus Smart ideally a bench guy?
Yep. So again, a lot of this gets back to Hayward. If Hayward were who we were, you know, you thought he was, then he'd be in the starting lineup and you'd have a little bit more. Then you, on the last spot, the fifth spot, you can mix and match a little bit and just go matchups. You know, Baines against Philly or whoever. But the you know, I just think they got a lot of guys who are better off on the second unit, and that's a little bit of a problem. It's not a big problem.
After the Bruins ended last night, I watched a little bit of that Philly-Oklahoma City game. I don't know how that Philly team does anything or goes anywhere. They are a basket case at the end of these games. They had like an 8-point lead with a minute left, and it was came down to a one-possession game. And they've got the situation where they're just at the – there's a little time left over the shot clock, up 2 points at the end of the game. So they have to shoot. They do, they miss, and Ben Simmons gets the rebound. But because he's so freaked out about having to shoot free throws, he can't shoot free throws. He immediately tries to get rid of it, and it's batted out of bounds, and they keep the ball, and they survive it. But any other team, any other player, you're grabbing that rebound, and you're holding it and getting fouled and going to the line and ending the game. But because he's so flawed, and they are so flawed, that they have to go through all these permutations because of all their guys that can't shoot. Oh, I don't know how that team has gotten to where they've gotten to.
Yeah, they're a notch below the other three in the East. They are.
Brian in Fitchburg on the Bruins. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Mike, before I get to my Bruins comment, I think Trotz on the aisle has Coach of the Year.
Yeah, you know what? They mentioned that in the break, too. That's a good one.
Hey, Sir Topham Hatt, if you could please save me a front row seat on the dining car. I am aboard this train, baby.
All right, Brian and Fitchburg, all aboard.
Woo! The only thing we got to do is instead of throwing Mama from the train, we got to throw Nordstrom for the train. Talk about Captain Useless.
Okay.
52 games, 8 points. I don't know why he still gets 15 minutes a game. And last night when Corrali went out and you saw Nordstrom get more time, he's got to have naked photos of Captain.
But who else do you have? See, that's the thing. So it used to be there were three or four guys like that in the lineup every night. We said they just can't carry this guy, and that's what Johansson and Coyle have sort of solved. But there's still, you know, I think Backes and Nordstrom. I look at both those guys. I'm like, oof, you know, can you upgrade? And you know, you can. Pastrnak comes back and Heinen comes down.
Right, exactly. That's all related to Pastrnak. I'll tell you what, I'd rather have Solaric out there than Nordstrom. Was Nordstrom the one that got stopped on that save?
last night?
Holy crap, you have the whole save. You shoot it in the middle of the net.
The glove save.
Good guess.
Where everyone's losing their mind over the glove save.
He shot it right into his glove.
Dude, you had the whole net.
What are you doing?
You put it right on the target.
You shot it back towards him. All he did was stick the glove in the middle of the net. What are you doing?
Exactly.
That was on him. That wasn't a great save. He shot it right into his glove. Holy crap, I looked at that and I said it's the most overrated save ever.
Agenda Free Friday continues after Murray's update.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
How would you feel playing with Tom Brady?
I would love it. In that organization, they've proven to be champions.
Yeah.
Year in and year out. You know, they work hard for sure. But you know where you're going to be at the end of the season. You're going to be looking at maybe a first round bye. You got to admire that organization. They do things right, and they've been doing it for a long, long, long time. I definitely would not mind going over there.
So that was Golden Tate. We didn't get to that sound from the week, but he was on a podcast and said, would love to come to New England. Your thoughts? You want him?
I do, absolutely. I'd take him in a second.
I think he's the perfect guy. I really do. Perfect, tough, dependable, goes over the middle. You can throw him all that little dink and dunk crap that Brady thrives on. Tate is perfect for that sort of stuff. He can go downfield. He's versatile inside, outside, the whole thing. He's won before. He's been through deep playoff run, the whole thing.
Well, the proof to the dink and dunk and how he would fit in this system, 23 total missed tackles after the catch. It was the most among any receiver last season. And he got dinged up for a little stretch there, too. He's nasty.
He's, like, to me, a prototype for this offense and this team.
I mean, that one's going to come down to the contract, isn't it?
Of course. So that's the problem. He's available to everyone. And you're going to have to outbid teams. Now, if he wants to be here so badly, will he leave some money on the table? That's the million-dollar question. I don't know, 31, his last chance to make money? You better be close. I'll put it to you like that. He might leave a little on the table, but not a lot. So I'm not really optimistic, but, like, that's the guy.
I mean, I don't, like, you said he's 31, right? Is that what you said?
Yes.
So in his last deal,
he'll be 31 in August.
Okay. His last deal was $31 million, 5 years. Like,
did he make it all? Yeah, he must have. Huh?
I think he did. Yeah, I think he did.
He got to the end of it.
So maybe he would be willing to sort of say, you know, I'll take a couple of years and a little less money than someone else gives me.
Yeah.
So, but to me, he'd be for their offense. It feels like that would be high up on the list.
Love that guy. All right, so that's a guy I would take. There's been a lot of suggestions about other guys who I just want no part of Antonio Brown. We were just talking about Antonio Brown has done this interview with ESPN, and they're previewing it with little cuts. He looks like such a jackwagon in this interview, I am telling you. He's sitting on a gold throne in the middle of his mansion with this blonde dyed mustache. He looks like such a freaking clown. I can't tell you. It's just, and that doesn't mean he's obviously a good football player, but it's like, I look at that and go, would you please?
Oh, yeah, no, and there's a good still shot of him, like, sitting sideways in a love seat with his head tilted back.
Gold-plated love seat in the middle of this gold foyer in this huge mansion. Like, would you give me a break with this guy?
His head tilted back and his feet up like he's tanning.
So I want nothing to do with Antonio Brown. I want nothing to do with, you know, Odell Beckham. You know how I feel about this. There's other suggestions. There was a story on ESPN, you know, bold moves for all 32 teams. The one for the Patriots was shop 2 second-day picks, meaning second round or lower, to Cincinnati for A.J. Green. No, thank you.
Murray?
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm good on A.J. Green. There is a softness there. Like, I like the talent, but no. I'd rather Golden Tate or someone that shows toughness. Like, I like the build of A.J. Green, but he's soft.
Oh, I thought you were going to be a yes on A.J. Green. I whiffed on that
really
one.
I like him.
Oh, no, I'm a no on A.J. Green.
Soft.
I'm a no on A.J. Green, no.
Just one of these, you know, prototypical big, soft, outside, you know, the highlights every other week. Good for your fantasy team, but boy, can you shut him down if you get up in his face. No.
There's too
sir.
Much Bengal in that yes. guy you'll never be able to get out of.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just think, and again, I don't know how tough he is. I want somebody that's going to catch the ball in traffic. I think that's critical for them that, you know, even if you're open, you're going to get hit and tackled because they like to throw in the middle of the field. And you want to give me the guy who can work outside the numbers, I'm good with that too, but he's still going to get hit and tackled within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Go get me a guy that I'm not aware of. I'm fine with that. A 40-catch guy on another team that's just a good second, third receiver who goes over the middle and is tough and keeps his mouth shut and will run the routes the way he wanted to run them. That's all I want. That's all they need. They need a couple of those guys. But give me that. I don't need a name. You know, the Tate I like because I think Tate has a working man's game to him that I like. But that's all I want. But it's a need. I mean, it might be their number one need. They have no...
I told you, I like the kid in Tampa that Murray brought up a while
Adam
back.
Humphries.
Yeah, I like him, and I like Jamison Crowder with the Redskins, too. I'd take either one of those guys.
All right, so there's your Patriots thought as we go forward here on Agenda Free Friday. Phil in Malden on the Bruins. Go ahead.
Yeah, nobody can, all your other callers, I agree with them. What a month of February the Bruins had. They're playing way out of their, you know, great. And this is for Murray. Murray, I love you. With the horn there, but I think you should get a pair of kilts and a bagpipes and march in the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Okay.
All right, Phil.
I am surprised that little piece of wood can generate that sort of sound, that full sort of real train sound, to the point where I thought that was actually the thing that they blew on the train.
That is true.
It's the first time the Bruins have had an unbeaten month, by the way, since November 2011.
Is that right?
Yeah, you know what happened that year?
I do. I'm vaguely... Well, no.
No, they get bounced in the second
exactly.
round.
Exactly. 2011, 2012. That was the next year. Right. That's right. Glenn in New Hampshire with a baseball thought on Agenda Free Friday. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, guys. About the pitch clock thing, 20 seconds, I think they ought to bring it down to 15 like the minors. Another thing about the DH in the National League, I think that it's going to take a lot of strategy out as far as a double switch and a sacrifice bunt.
Okay, I'm with you. I agree on both, but it's not the bunt. The bunt is actually the boring part of the pitcher. The interesting part of the pitcher is, well, it's good for pace of play. It moves the game. It moves it, man. So that's part of it. It's just a little bit more on the manager. You know, especially the decision I always like is when your starting pitcher's going well and you're down 2-1 in the seventh inning, and here comes the pitcher, right? And he's only thrown 70 pitches, call it, whatever, right? You know, the guy can still go. He's holding the other team down, but now you're running out of outs, and you got to decide whether to yank the pitcher or bring in the pinch hitter. Like, I always think that's always the hardest decision.
Yeah, no, that's a tough one, and that's a good one. I still think I'd still be willing to trade that, though. I'd rather put the DH in the National League if I can get some of those pace-to-play things.
Agreed. So, and
I would make that trade in a second.
I like the NL rules, but they need a pitch clock. And sure, I'd go 15 as well, caller, except they're going in the other direction. They're not going to do anything for another 3 years is the last we heard. So... It ain't going in the right direction.
It'll never happen the way they go. It's just typical baseball taking years to do something that should take 5 minutes.
Pat in Boston, give me a Bruins thought.
All right, so two quick things. I think one of the keys, obviously, to going on a deep run here would be to monitor Rask. And he's, you know, had history of falling apart, you know, second round, first round, obviously, last year. But I wonder if Cassidy would consider, I mean, they've been pacing him this season so far. And, you know, what if that means Halak playing one game series or just pacing him a little bit? Because I don't have confidence in Tuukka playing 25, 20 straight games and being elite like he has been. And my last question, you guys have asked this on the show a lot, and I want to know if your answers have changed. Who do you think wins the next championship between the Bruins and the Celtics?
Okay. I hate that question. Who wins the next championship between the Bruins and the Celtics?
I mean, I lean Celtics, but whatever.
I feel Bruins. I think they could do it this year.
I'll still go Celtics with that. I'll still go Celtics, but I hate the question. Because the Bruins can win in any year. Like, it's just that's this year, the Bruins. But the Celtics, if they pull off this trade and it's Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving and they're invested and they want to be here and they sign and that's your team, then Celtics. So get back to me in the offseason. The way it is now, Bruins. The thing about the hockey team, they're unless you're one of the top two teams in the NBA, your hockey team is always closer than your basketball team.
Right.
The way that league works. The Rask thing. Pacing him, for sure. The fact that Halak has picked up his game recently, good sign. You can sit Rask in games in the regular season down the stretch. If they can keep him under 50, then I think you're that's a really good situation. And by the way, that wasn't all by design. Tuukka sucked eggs to begin the year, and they benched him. And then he had that personal thing that cost him a couple of games. So, no, it's not like they meant to have him down at this number. He played himself down to this number. But, oh well, silver lining. If Halak can keep him going and just, you know, win his starts, enough of them down the stretch, you get Rask to 48, you know, 49 games, something like that. That would be good for them.
I mean, this is give another nod to Cassidy on this one, because they played Halak against San Jose. They win that game. They played Rask last night. They win that game. Right now, it's 35 games for Rask, 32 for Halak. I mean, that's pretty good balance.
How many are left? They should be able to keep Rask easy in the
40s. Yeah, no, it's going to end up like 43-39 or something
terrific.
Like that.
Oh, no, that's I said 48.
He won't get that high. They've only got 15 games left.
So that's good. That's good. I think a lot of it was self-inflicted by Rask. Either way, but pace him in the playoffs, give him a game in the playoffs, not the way it works. Not the way it works, especially when you've got a $7 million goalie. No. Rask doesn't get that deference. You want to be the franchise goalie that all the boo-hoo Tuukka crew media people say that you are? You're the guy? We've underrated the guy? You don't get to take breaks in that. That's not the way it works. You don't take days off in the playoffs. You play 28 if that's what it takes.
Yeah, you want to get Rask a break? Sweep someone.
So, exactly right.
But if it went sideways on him and he crapped his pants again, literally and figuratively, in the playoffs, Halak has done it. He's been part of a deep run. Granted, it's almost a decade, but
you've got a better option, right. In emergency, you have a better option. No question about it. But nope, Rask doesn't get that. He doesn't get that break. Let's see what you do in the playoffs, Tukes. It's that time again. We've got a long commercial-free segment next in which you'll get the Fuppets. We have fresh Fuppets. And Hardy once again did a bang-up job, so he liked to play it twice to make sure everyone sees it and hears it. The Fuppets coming up next, and this character coach story with the Patriots, which I find interesting. That's right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Hard to say that any one person is being targeted when there have been 25 arrests. These are people from all walks of life, all socioeconomic statuses. So it is crazy to think that we're targeting one person when Mr. Kraft got caught up in the midst of a larger sting that netted hundreds of people through many different counties.
David Ehrenberg, the prosecuting attorney down there in Palm Beach, on the answer about are they targeting Robert Kraft, and I just play that because we start to hear about Kraft's defense and pleading not guilty and some of the things coming out, you get the sense that he is going to claim that it was a little bit of a setup and that they were targeting him. Why'd you... After you had all these days and weeks of surveillance and evidence and eyewitness testimony, why'd you install cameras the day before he showed up? So that's just one thing. The traffic stopped, da-da-da. We have all sorts of indications now of how Kraft is going to try and get out of the legal charges. And listening to Zoe today, it's all becoming clear, you know, what's the end game? We ask, what's the end game? Because what the hell? The act is the act. We all know what he did and what was going on there. And so the PR hits, the PR hit. So what's to gain? And Zoe seemed to think, if the charges are dismissed, if they're dismissed, flat out dropped, that the league won't do anything to him, and he'll be there opening night, and that's the whole game. There's nothing you can do about the PR hit. The PR hit's the PR hit. Like, you know, we all know what was going on there, and we all have our opinion about it. That's not going to change, and Kraft knows it. So if that's not going to change, at least can I make it so I can not get suspended and show up on opening night? And so this is the approach. I'm going to try and get it flat out dropped. Because as the Midday guys were saying, there's a difference and there's some precedent. Jimmy Haslam, the Cleveland owner, is one of them, had charges against him dropped and was not punished by the league. Players, meanwhile, have had well, some guys had not been charged. Ezekiel Elliott was still suspended. So it differs on players. But with owners, when other guys have had charges dropped, it hasn't impacted them. So that's the play. And then it was announced yesterday that the Patriots are losing their character coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this was, we just sort of brushed this off. And again, made the easy joke that the character coach, after all this time here with the Patriots, seeing a guy, you know, murder, steroids, drugs, prostitution, cheating scandals, throws up his hands and says, I can't help you. Okay, this is too much. I don't feel I'm making an impact here. Easy joke. Okay, you know, but it feels like, well, it was related. It was related. Ben Volen and Nora Princiati in the Boston Globe. Patriots coaching staff has suffered another substantial loss this offseason as Jack Easterby, the team's character coach and one of Bill Belichick's closest confidants, is leaving after six seasons. Multiple league sources confirmed. Now, Easterby's contract with the Patriots expired after last season, but he has decided to continue other and pursue other opportunities in football. So he's going to another staff. He was on Pioli's staff in Kansas City before he came here, so he's going to go do this for somewhere else. Which is odd because Easterby apparently was a very important guy internally.
This surprised me when I read this. Go ahead.
Not that I knew it or, you know, many of us knew this, but Easterby helped navigate the Patriots through significant highs and lows over the 6 years he was on the job. The Aaron Hernandez ordeal, the Deflategate fiasco, plus four Super Bowl runs. Last season, Easterby's foremost assignment was mentoring and keeping close tabs on troubled receiver Josh Gordon. Easterby felt his time with the team had run its course, and the Kraft situation does not sit well with him, according to league sources. Easterby retweeted a message Saints tight end Ben Watson tweeted out last Friday about, quote, the entrenched evil of human trafficking. And so I clicked on that tweet and looked this up. This was on the 22nd. Whatever day was that? Friday? Was that the day it dropped? What was the day the Kraft?
Yeah, that's Friday. Yeah, correct. Friday.
Yeah, so on the day that Kraft story came out, Ben Watson tweeted, former Patriot, be appalled but not surprised. Human trafficking is a $150 billion industry. Sexual exploitation and sex trafficking are not simply horrific crimes that occur over there in a faraway land, but are an entrenched evil, demanded, nurtured, enabled, and protected by the appetites and power of family, friends, and coworkers right here. Its roots run much deeper than a famous name or headline. No matter the perpetrator, human dignity, truth, and justice demand that these crimes against humanity be unveiled, individuals and collectives involved be punished, and survivors be restored. It is well past the time we stop looking the other way. So he's saying, good that they exposed Robert. Good that he's going to be punished. This is what we have to do. This is what Ben Watson tweeted, basically. And Easterby retweeted it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically given the old thumbs up sausage emoji, whatever you want to say.
Eggplant.
Yeah.
The old endorsement there. So
pretty telling.
Pretty telling. Your character coach basically, you know, gives a thumbs up to a massive moral denouncement of your owner. So maybe we should have known then. Not that I'm paying attention to this crap or on Twitter, but, you know, anyone who was paying attention to that should have known right then, well, this guy's not long for here. Was it their doing or his doing? Either way, this sort of shows you, oh, it's just interesting. Like, there's a little crack there. And I never realized how important this guy was.
Isn't he referred to as a Belichick confidant?
Well, just let me read quickly from, again, the same story. He became a crucial voice for Belichick in the personnel department over the years. A 2015 ESPN magazine article depicted Easterby as the Patriots' secret weapon. And an article about him on the team website in November called him, quote, the most influential Patriot you've never heard of, end quote. Easterby's main responsibility was to establish and set the team's culture. He was a jack of all trades. He became a part of Belichick's inner circle and one of the most important executives in the building, on par with director of player personnel Nick Caserio.
I know, I saw that too, yeah.
This guy was as big as Nick Caserio? Easterby not only served as the team chaplain, but also was a trusted mentor for players, helped Belichick determine which players would and wouldn't fit with his program, participated as a coach in on-field drills, and sat in on almost every personnel meeting with Bill Belichick. Easterby normally would be a crucial voice for the Patriots this week at the NFL Combine as they sift through hundreds of draft prospects, but the team's coaches found out Monday that Easterby is not returning. So that's just one of those stories where I went, huh.
It caught me by surprise, too, when I read some of the details on it. And look, I see, I link it to all the other coaches.
Yeah, all right,
these,
right.
All these guys are leaving. Now he's going. And he was a Belichick confidant? What do they know? Like, I still wonder about Bill. And I know, I say this every year at this time, for crying out loud. I certainly said it last year, but I don't know.
Well, so you think it means Bill's leaving?
In the next year? And I know I said that last year.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't, all of a sudden, the guy walks out the door? Just like, you know, I
don't know why he wouldn't stay as long as Bill was if he's this important.
Okay, so this is my point. Is it really related to the owner? Or is it something that we don't know about with Bill?
The fact that he sent out that Ben Watson tweet tells me he feels strongly about this. Okay. Team chaplain and the character coach. At some point, the character coach on the Patriots says, guys, enough. I can't keep, like, this stands against everything I stand for.
Okay, so assuming he wasn't fired, right? And that, you know, that the Robert or the Kraft saw the tweet and said, get out of here. You're done.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, we're not going to tolerate that. Leaving that aside, you're telling me Bill couldn't talk about
it? Hey, Jimmy, why don't we do the top of the hour update and we'll do it next segment, okay? Just we don't want to get too behind the clock because I know we like to stay on time. Hardy's Fuppets coming up after this 90-second update. No commercials and your phone calls here on a Agenda-Free Friday.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.